Welcome to The Color Cast, a show about color grading, color science, and post-production. We're The Coloristos. I'm Juan Salvo, an online editor and colorist in New York City.
I'm Josh Pitok. I'm a colorist for reality TV in LA.
And I'm Jason Myris, a colorist and post-production engineer in Los Angeles. So I think a good topic for today, you guys, is a question that's been coming up a lot on Lift Gamma Gain and other forums. A lot of colorists are asking what kind of monitor is acceptable for grading. There's a lot of questions about a GUI monitor versus a reference monitor. And I just wanted to see what you guys thought about that. What do you think in terms of acceptability for a colorist starting out?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really difficult question sometimes to ask. The thing that I usually jump to is what's your delivery? What exactly are you going for? Are you going for broadcast? Are you going for a theatrical distribution? Are you just making a video that's going to be on YouTube? So, I mean, to me, that's the most important thing to know is where is your work going to end up?
I'll jump in there and say, Josh, I think the most important thing is just the fact that you're working in video space. And, it's such a wild west kind of scenario in terms of what works for the internet that, you can never tell what device it's going to be played on. So it's often better just to grade for video and then convert for the internet and actually use a proper video monitor. I find even for the web, I find like computer displays are just not very good color accurate or reliable displays in general.
And when you say grade for video, you're talking about grading in Rec 709.
Exactly.
Just to be clear.
I think that should be the kind of the bare minimum, the standard for video grading. I know both of you work in broadcast world, so you guys are probably used to working in 709. I am too. And it's just sort of, it becomes the de facto standard for video grading now,
Well, okay, take this into consideration. We've got a lot of new people here that have never been on Resolve. And they figure, hey, you know what? I'd like to start getting into this. It's a difficult thing for someone to say, I need to kick down $25,000 for a BVM monitor or even
I'm not saying you need a BVM.
Right.
I mean, I think here's the thing. There's two levels to this. One is figuring out how to use, if we're going to use the example of Resolve, figuring out how to use Resolve, what buttons, how you work the GUI, how you how you approach a grade, all those sort of philosophical and technical things you can do without a grading monitor. You don't need to see a proper calibrated image or have a referenced image in order to be able to do. But you're not going to be able to do paying gigs that way, right? You can't charge someone for a service that you can't provide on a technical level if you can't be sure that this grade is going to look that way on any properly calibrated display.
Right, right.
And so that's kind of the baseline differentiator, right? That's the crossover point. It's like, where do you go from being an amateur to being a professional? It's when you need to deliver something that is replicatable and reliable and accurate. And in order to be able to do that, you really do need to have a broadcast display. There's just no shortcut there.
I'll give you one thing that threw a wrench in this whole system, and it was HP DreamColor. Everybody figured, hey, look, this is a calibratable monitor. It's something that I can get pretty close to spec, and it's relatively inexpensive. Now, the end note to that is that you really don't see too many DreamColors around anymore. I mean, do they even make them anymore?
Yeah, they still make. I mean, you see them once in a while. Jason, do you see any of the DreamColors floating around?
Well, it's interesting. The DreamColor is really a crossover product where it's a legitimate computer display. I mean, just for people that haven't heard the story yet, the DreamColor came as a product of DreamWorks when they first started animating as a company on computers and digitally. They needed something that would provide consistent color for all of their animators. And so the DreamColor was really made for animation. That was what was in mind when it came about. And so, people said, okay, hey, consistent color accurate, maybe this will work for other things like grading. And so it's a real polarizing topic. There are many people that are, SDI reference monitor all the way. And then there's some people that say, hey, if you're intelligent about this and you know what you're doing, a DreamColor is a high performing display that can work. I think it's one of the few exceptions, though, that could be, but it's not many others.
to me, it's like when you start adding on all the little extra bells and whistles that you need to make a Dream Color work.
Right.
At that point, you might as well have just gone, spend a little bit more money, get a decent, you know, maybe not a grade one, but a decent FSI monitor that gets SDI in and just be done with it.
Yeah, there's that the beautiful 17-inch monitor from FSI, the new one, the I think it's the 170W or something. That is, it's like LED backlit. It actually has wider gamut than their main grading monitor, their 2461. And it's a gorgeous, gorgeous monitor. It's full res HD. And the only caveat is it's 17 inches instead of 24 inches, but it's like $3,200 or $3,300. It's really, really affordable. And it's a calibrated display with proper HDSDI input. It even supports like DCI color space. It's insane. But, you know, then you get people who go like, well, $3,300, that's way too much. And you get into the issue of like, you know, yeah, you can buy like the, you know, the Dell computer displays, and they're really good computer displays that you can buy for $1,000, but they're ultimately, they're just computer displays.
And I think one of the other big things too is a lot of people, when they get into grading, they have some other prior art that they've been doing. And, you know, a real natural progression to grading is to come from, say, photography. And so a lot of people go and they say, hey, you know, I'm a photographer. I'd like to get into color grading. It's a similar science. And they go and they say, I have been editing at a high level photo images on my computer display for a long time. Why is that not possible on for color grading also on a computer display? And the big, big difference that I think that they don't understand is that their output's going to be on a TV, whereas their images will likely be on a computer display. And that difference is what changes things a lot.
You know, even if you get into the real professional level photography work, where it's work that's being done really for print and then also for web, at that level, you still need really, you know, high-end displays. You're not dealing with like consumer level $1,000 displays. You're dealing with $4,000 or $5,000 critical 10-bit evaluation panels that are capable of producing an accurate picture, or can be calibrated and are fine-tuned exactly for doing print work and doing reliable, replicable color.
Yeah. So, I mean, what do you guys think about using plasma? Like, I know Dan in London at Smoke and Mirrors, he actually is grading all day on a plasma monitor.
I think there's the whole BT300 line of plasmas, which is not unreasonably priced. It's like the professional plasmas. I think the smallest is 42 inches. Are actually really, really good grading monitors. They're very, very accurate. They have built-in color management systems, so you can do like 10-point calibration. You can set them for DCI, P3 space. You can set them for 709. They do full, you know, 100% gamut 709. You know, they're beautiful monitors. They're fantastic devices, and they don't cost that much, but you still need to calibrate it, and that is a tricky process that you need a professional to do. You need a really, you know, expensive, high-quality probe in order to be able to do it reliably, and you need to do it a couple times a year, really.
Yeah. In order to be accurate, I think one of the big things that a lot of people also don't understand is if you really want to have something you can rely on that's good for critical evaluation, the kind of measurement tool that's required to calibrate a monitor at a high level is a really, I mean, it's, you know, small BMW cost, yeah. You know? So for instance, I actually, you know, and you guys have probably been through it too. I just went through calibration of my monitors a couple weeks ago. One of the really popular guys in Los Angeles, David Abrams, came over, and he has a Photo Research PR 655, I believe. I think that's what it is. Long story short, there's a couple of good, they're photometers essentially, and they are $20,000 to $25,000. And then Dave was telling me, you know, he has to spend $1,200 every year or so just to send it back in order to get it calibrated.
Yeah.
So he has a great equipment expense, as well as one of the big things is that when the monitors come out of the factory, even when they're at a high level, you know, these are devices with variations. And so one of David's great skills, and any other good calibrator, is the ability to handle the idiosyncrasies between, say, an OLED display, an LCD display, a plasma, and take those into account in sort of an organic way in order to get a real world result that works. So
let's just quickly go over like the technologies that we're talking about for maybe people that are new to this. So, you know, there's your computer display gets connected by DVI or DisplayPort or maybe even HDMI or whatever. But you know, it's connected by a computer RGB signal. It has a different gamma than video space. It has a different gamut than video space. It's, you know, it's a computer display. When you're dealing with something that's specifically video, you do it over video baseband connections. So like HDSDI or component or a composite signal for SD. It's sent as a video signal out of a video IO card. It's not sent out of your graphics card usually. There's some exceptions, which are like the Quadro SDI, which has an SDI output. And so you're dealing with a completely different sort of signal path, and you're dealing with a display that's targeted towards that signal path or has been modified to be targeted towards that signal path. In the case of like the Dream Color, which you would use, you wouldn't use the Dream Color for color grading out of the box. You would attach it to an HDSDI to DisplayPort adapter in order to be able to properly use it in video space, right?
Right, right. And it also, I mean, something like that doesn't display any interlacing as well. I mean, a computer monitor can't interlace.
Right, and some video monitors can't interlace either.
Right, right.
If you're dealing with LCD technology, you're doing some kind of interlace interpretation. So then beyond that, we have the issue of the display technology. So there's, you know, just there's the old CRTs, which are still being used. And I'm, in fact, I have one here in my suite right now. You know, I have a BVM D and I have a BVM A in the other room. And they're 30-inch monitors, and they used to be $35,000, $40,000. And now, you know, they don't make them anymore, so you can't really buy them. and then there's LCD, which is sort of what has become the dominant format. And there's a few variations on LCDs, the backlight variation, whether it's a CCFL or an LED backlight. Usually LED kind of is the standard now. But for example, the FSI monitors, the 2461 uses a CCFL light.
Yeah. And a lot of people say that CCFL in certain cases at high quality has a wider gamut than LED, although LED can be more consistent. So no matter what you're dealing with, it's this, you know, positives and negatives that you have to balance in the hopes that it takes care of your application. You know,
exactly. And then beyond that, you have plasma, which is actually kind of an older technology to LCD, but it sort of is less dominant in the market than it was because now LCD screens are larger. And so on the consumer side, the LCD market is sort of taking over and there's fewer and fewer plasma manufacturers. But for professionals, if you want larger displays that are color accurate, the only choice is really for flat panel. The only choice is plasma. You wouldn't go with an LCD for a larger display. You want to go with really Panasonic plasmas are the choice.
Unless you want to do Dolby.
Well, Dolby is not that, it's 32 inches, but that's LCD technology, but that's,
yeah.
I mean, that's what is it going for? $30,000, $34,000?
Maybe a little bit more, yeah.
It's, you know, it's a very, very highly engineered, highly capable display.
The back end of it is tremendous. I mean, every 300 hours it requires maintenance, you know, so people look at that and they're like, oh, that looks like, you know, what were those DLP televisions with the sort of the large back on them. Anyway, people look at the Dolby and they're like, you know, if they don't know what they're looking at, you know, they'll be like, oh, that's an LCD display. What's the big deal there? And, you know, well, it's the Dolby technician that, you know, comes in and makes sure that it's still working, you know, at that high level for, you know, 40 grand or 35 grand, you know, and it takes effort to have a monitor like that. It's not cheap.
Yeah. One thing I'd like to say about the plasma, though, I own a plasma, and the one thing that I notice is you have a lot of noise in the blacks. I don't know if that's just me or my setup, but I hear that is a pretty common issue with plasmas. And so if you're trying to figure out if something is looking right, or if you really do have an issue, it's hard to tell if you're looking at it on a plasma.
Yeah. So a lot of that has to do also with the kind of the display generation. So some generations of plasma displays are a little better performing than others,
mm-hmm.
but generally speaking, plasmas are going to be noisier. They're also not meant to really be looked at up close. You know, the effective resolution is a little bit lower because they're really meant to be, you know, a little bit more of a distance view device. With the Dolby, Jason, to go back to what you were pointing out, you know, the real, what you're really paying for in that Dolby is the low light performance, the black detail, the color detail and the shadows. And that stuff is where the LCDs tend to fall short, and the Dolby really kind of excels. And that's what they're really selling with that display.
Yeah, and on the other hand, plasma has a really great viewing angle. That is one thing that I do notice about LCDs and OLEDs is the viewing angle is kind of a problem sometimes.
Yeah, so like one shortcut, you know, we talk about is like using consumer grade plasmas in order to grade or have like something lower cost that's evaluation. And that's not necessarily a bad choice, but you are making some sacrifices. So the benefit is you have a device in like a Panasonic VT30 or a VT25, you have a device that's capable of a fairly accurate picture, but you're going to have some, you know, the chance for banding if you're not able to get a 10-bit HDMI signal to it. You're going to have some noise in the image. You know, if you get really close to it, you're going to see it's not really a sharp, clean image. There's some posterizing and some noise in it. So that's the trade-off. There's also, we should mention, the newer technology, which is the OLEDs, which are just kind of popping onto the market. I know, Josh, you were trying one of those out.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I have one in the bay right now, and actually it's really good. I previously used a JVC Verte monitor, and it was a big step up for sure. It looks great. The viewing angle is really evident, though. When you look at it off-axis, you can definitely see that weird color shift on it. So as long as you're comfortable with looking at it dead-on, then it's not too much of a deal.
So, I mean, you've got the PVM, the 2541 in your suite now?
I have, yes, the PVM OLED.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a great monitor. I think it's going for about $5,400. It does contrast that actually beats, like, black level beats a CRT, contrast beats a CRT. The shadow detail, I think, is really exceptional. It's a 10-bit panel, 10-bit processing. You know, it's a really, really amazing value. You know, people, we talk about how a properly calibrated monitor is really the one area left in grading where you don't have really low cost or, you know, sort of market changing cost solutions. But there are a lot of really great value displays out there. You know, the FSIs, the Sony OLEDs, even the Panasonic plasmas that are not that expensive, you know, compared to like a $34,000 Dolby display or a, you know, a CRT that used to cost $40,000.
Yeah.
You're looking at something that's very, very cost effective at around $5,000 that's going to give you a really accurate picture once you get it calibrated.
All right.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's one of the big things that, people want to realize if they do take a look early on and, you know, they're sort of building their suite and they want to get a plasma to start out with. There's probably a question of why a Panasonic, you know, why not a Samsung or an LG? And there is a possibility that those panels could work. But the main reason that people need to understand with the Panasonic is that all of the Panasonics that are popular, so that's usually the VT, the GT, and the ST series. So for instance, the VT25, the VT30, the VT50, which came out now. What's going on with those is there is a shortcut there. So it's a select set of panels that fulfill a couple of requirements. First off, the panel is exceptionally good. So for instance, the BT300 panel is a 13th gen Panasonic panel. That's the same panel actually that's in the VT25, which was pretty famous and sort of helped kick off the Panasonic what we'll call maybe revolution. There was also the Panasonic Professional, the UK series. I think they were the PF11 or PH11s, but also in there were the VT25s and the VT30s, and they have the same panel that's in the BT300. Largely, the BT300 has a professional set of inputs. It has the ability to take high performance input cards like the SDI card. It also has a heavier duty case that's made for moving around or professional use, whereas you wouldn't want to move a home plasma around too much. But then what they do have in common that's really, really important is they have deep calibration. And what that means is that a professional calibrator can come in. And while there are ways to improve that, for instance, there are external boxes like you guys know, the Davio, that offer high-end video processing to help get a panel into alignment. Without that box, even though they still have what we'll call deep, meticulous, multi-point adjustment over grayscale and then RGB high and low and other things that will allow the panel to actually come into being quite accurate. And that's the reason why Panasonic's so popular.
I think you hit the nail on the head there. I mean, the big advantage of the Panasonic plasmas is their ability to calibrate, and it takes away the cost of, you know, a $6,000 processing box that you used to need. Because people have been using plasmas and suites here and high-end suites here in New York for years before that BT300 came around. But you always needed a Davio box, you needed a probe, you needed Lightscape CMS or something similar in order to properly profile the display and have a LUT that properly calibrated the display. And with the built-in CMS now, you can definitely do 709 right out of the box with a proper calibration. And you can even get away with some DCI stuff out of the box with a proper calibration. So it's a really, really powerful box. You know, the you will have to pay for like the HDSDI options if you want like the dual link HDSDI. It's going to basically double the cost of the box. But you could even do 2K signal into that plasma with the dual link HDSDI option.
Yeah.
The one cool thing is the larger size is a lot more impressive to your clients as well.
Sure, it makes it easy to use like a shared display, and that's handy in a grading environment. You know, if you can have one display that everybody looks at, that's a great way to grade, because you don't have to worry about are the displays perfectly matched, or you know exactly what your client is looking at. We've got a lot to discuss. We'll let you guys digest this. Definitely be an ongoing topic of discussion here on the Coloristos. I'm Juan Salvo in New York City. You can reach me at my website, juansalvo.com. And I'm also available on Twitter at @J_Salvo.
And I'm Josh Petok. I am usually found on Twitter at Josh Petok. You can also see me. I'm a moderator on Lift Gamma Gain.
And I'm Jason Myers. You can catch us all between now and our next podcast at liftgammagain.com, where we'll be talking about monitors for grading. There's a lot of topics there as well on other aspects of color correction and color science. But until our next podcast, thanks for listening.